Solis inside Achampong. Havertz beautifully left. Odegaard. What a wonderfully crafted goal that is. And Martin Odegaard has really hit the ground running this season. His third goal of this season. Solis, lovely ball, beautiful dummy by Havertz. And Martin Odegaard does the rest.
Hello, and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Terry, back from holiday. Had a nice time away, I hope.
Yes, very nice time, very relaxing. I didn't get to watch much football, because there were not many football places around where I was. But yeah, a really, really nice, relaxing time, and I'm absolutely delighted to be back. Anxious to get chatting about football and stuff.
Well, yeah, but the one benefit of you being away during that time was, of course, you were away for the end of the transfer window, which is, of course, the most tiresome point of the season, isn't it? But you missed it all, didn't you?
I didn't miss it. Well, no, I didn't, because I hadn't phoned, didn't I, Graham? So I was staying across it. I do think it's very, very funny, because guys like us, we frequently and rightly lament the wrongness of the transfer window, and yet, we are as glued to it as everybody else is, because it is, very much a product of the modern game and hugely, hugely popular. People just love it.
Yes, they do.
Because most people find football quite boring, so it adds a little bit of additional spice and zest to the game, and, you know, people are into it, so. Palace had a moderately decent window, actually, but we can discuss that over the ensuing months as to see whether or not I think Palace had a decent window.
Mm. What was interesting, involved both of our clubs, Terry, was the tug of war over Malik Fofana.
That was brilliant.
Or Malik to Jets Fofana.
I know. Jet number one. Jet number two. Jet number one.
Jets waiting for him.
So the
one goes to Palace.
The red and white jet will take you to Sunderland. The red and blue jet will take you to South London. Which one will you choose, Malik? Which one will you choose? Well, here is a gentleman on the end here. Yeah, hang on, your agent's on the phone. Yes, that was excellent and just the kind of fun that you want to see. And there's me going, yeah, come on, Malik. And I've never heard of this guy, never seen him. But, you know, it's like, come on. Yes, come on. You know it's the right thing to do. And it's just because I have no clue as to whether or not he would have been the right fit. Pierre Sage was very keen to sign him because he had him at Lyon. But then apparently so was Kirill Louis-Dreyfus, who went out there and spoke to the guy. It's literally, he said, hello, I'm a billionaire. I would like you to sign for my club. Okay. It's
like, he didn't.
You know.
the beginning of last week, I had no idea who that guy was. And I was following that while I was having his face tattooed onto my arm, obviously, in the middle of the drama. Now he's all I think about.
Yeah, I do regret the Fofana and squad number shirt that I've got hanging off the back of my wall right now. I've had to position my head in strategically so none of you guys can see it. Very embarrassing. But there you go.
I'd like to say that it's rare you get some bonkers excitement on transfer deadline day, but no, it always happens, doesn't it? There's always some idiot transaction going on. And there was quite a lot on the last day of the transfer window. We spoke, Jan, last week. We recorded the podcast about 24 hours before the transfer window actually closed. And I don't know about you, Jan, but I could not see what was going to happen in the next 24 hours with the amount of business that was going to happen and the amount of business that didn't happen. It just goes to show that these multi-million pound organisations really, really, really are terribly run, aren't they?
Well, they certainly are. I mean, if you're so minded, go and look at what happened at Everton, who ended up with no one at all, bizarrely. These organisations waiting till the last minute. I mean, that's crazy. In any other organisation, you'd get hauled in front of your manager going, why did you leave this to the last minute? I told you to go and do this thing and you left it till the last minute and then you messed it up. But anyway, it does make for entertainment for those who find football boring.
The women's transfer window closed on Thursday and it was much more sedate. That's because the majority of business had happened in July. That's when they issued all their contracts out. So there was very, very little business done on the final day. It was extended just a couple of days longer so that they could finish Champions League qualification, which finished on the Wednesday night. So they closed the transfer window on Thursday. But even then, it didn't see a lot more business happening. Terry, the Bundesliga started last week as well, didn't it? So we didn't get a chance to talk to you about that. Yeah, those lazy, lazy Germans starting a week after everyone else. How's it started out there? Because obviously Bayern short odds to win yet another title. And Harry Kane in rich scoring form must be walking it already.
Walking it already. Apart from the fact that Augsburg are currently top of the table. Indeed. Yes, I know. Yeah, who? I mean, like, I should point out, Augsburg are a really awful football club.
Yeah.
Bayern are currently sixth. I mean, it's two games in, lads. I mean, it's super, super, super early days. But there's been some really interesting results in the Bundesliga, not least from Elversberg, who are currently fourth with a 100% record at the moment. And this is a village that, they've been knocking on the door for ages, but they are effectively a village club. But they've got a tremendous program. They don't have a tremendous amount of funding going on, but they've just got a great program. And they're one of these clubs that has been able to sort of like find a way through while bigger clubs have just mismanaged themselves to the point where they've got so much legacy debt that they can't manage. And smaller clubs like Elversberg, and obviously they've been relegated last year, but Heidenheim, you can file under them as well. You know, they've come up and they've got momentum and they've got good players and, you know, they've done really, really well. They beat Leverkusen 3-2 and they beat Gladbach 4-3. And if I tell you that they were 3-1 down in that game and they won it in the 92nd minute. So yeah, they're now fourth. And in fact, they're not even actually among the bookies' favourites to be relegated. Their odds on getting relegated are fairly short, but they're not among the favourites. So the favourites, in fact, the Opta supercomputer, believe it or not, says that it will be Cologne and Schalke who will finish in the bottom two of the Bundesliga. Schalke, of course, having come up as champions, but they had an extraordinary result in so many ways. They drew 0-0 with Bayern at home. Now, I mean, it's a measure of just how far Bayern have stretched out apart from anyone else, that this was a shock. You know, you've got Elversberg, a village club, beating a big giant of the German game, Gladbach. But no, that's not the shock of the week, lads. The shock of the week is Schalke. And once upon a time, as recently as 2018, Schalke were runners-up in the Bundesliga. And so it's a measure of just how far they've fallen. They're among the favourites to be relegated. They've got a massive Gazprom-shaped hole in their finances, which they still haven't really been able to work through. They've got a good programme. They got a good coach, but they are not expected to do much. So they've hosted Bayern in their first home game. And the atmosphere, and I only caught the highlights, didn't watch the game, but I caught the highlights. The atmosphere in the stadium there was insane. Schalke fans just absolutely putting the kitchen sink into the entire atmosphere. And Vincent Kompany, I think, mindful of the combination of World Cup fatigue and the Champions League about to kick off, left Olise and Musiala and Kane on the bench. He started to bring them in when it was becoming clear that they weren't making their way through. But some heroic defending and some great goalkeeping by Loris Karius in the Schalke goal. Yes, Loris Karius, that's where he is, produced this 0-0 win, which was celebrated like a great famous victory. And it was an amazing atmosphere. And Kompany looking a little bit embarrassed, but in a kind of looking up from his paper kind of way, saying, oh, yeah, that's a bit awkward. Yeah, okay, well, anyway, we roll on. But it's a great shot in the arm for Schalke, who, I mean, as much as being a Dortmund guy, I shouldn't want Schalke to do well. But, you know, the Revere Derby should be a regular feature in the Bundesliga, and you need to have Dortmund and Schalke in the same division in order for that to happen. So it's contributed to what's been a fairly lively start to the season. It, again, 2 weeks in, shockingly early days, but we're already seeing some indications as to how the season might go. Freiburg, I will mention as well, not quite so eye-catching, but second in the table. They finished in the Europa League final last season. They've had a project that's been developing for some time, and it feels as though, you know, once Bayern hit their stride, it'll probably, the title will be decided in March, I guess. But what's going on underneath, again, could be quite exciting. It was a really encouraging start to the Bundesliga season.
You didn't mention the performance that Dortmund put in at the weekend as well against Hoffenheim.
From 2-0 down to 3-2, that was a terrific performance. Yeah, I mean, these are two established Bundesliga sides. I guess I'm quite interested in what the outliers are doing. That was a terrific game to follow as well, and a terrific performance. Dortmund, you know, maximum points as well. So that is encouraging as a Dortmund guy. But I've been a bit pessimistic about Dortmund, but they signed a couple of Greek guys, one of which now is injured, unfortunately, who are really, really good, and they are going through a squad refresh. So they could be quite interesting, but they've got Anton now is in his third season, and Gyurassi, I think, in his fourth season as well, counterbalancing that Dortmund squad. Yeah, and Kovac, although he's a bit of a humdrum coach tactically, you know, he's taken away quite a lot of vibey and chaosiness about Dortmund, which is a good thing and it's a bad thing. I was kind of a bit pessimistic about how the season would pan out, but the first two games, if they're anything to go by, then I think we're in for a lot of fun. If you're a Spurs fan and you're interested in Mikey Moore as well, he's gone to Cologne with a few other English lads as well. So he's in for a real battle there. That's going to be a real journey for him there, because I think Cologne are going to struggle this season. So yeah, if you're based in the UK, then of course you get the opportunity to watch some of these games for free.
Yes, you do, on the BBC. On the BBC have got a match
no less
on Friday night. And as Terry said, they've got highlights there as well available on the iPlayer, which is great news. But let's talk about the weekend's actions in the Premier League, because there was some fun and games over here. You don't have to go to Germany for all the fun. There was plenty of fun over here as well. Tottenham, did they score this weekend, Jan?
No, they didn't.
No? Oh, no. I'm sure it'll come sooner or later, won't it?
It will, yeah. They're registering a big fat zero, having spent flipping great wadges of cash on lots and lots of players, and it's not coming together. It is early days.
It is early days.
But we all enjoyed Tottenham so much last season, only for them to let us down at the last minute. But it feels natural now for Tottenham to struggle during the season. And if it doesn't happen, then something feels a bit weird, a little bit off. So I'm pleased it's continuing.
Well, they have at least got a point. But according to some people, they were lucky to get that, with Oliver Glasner, for one, being quite incensed that a goal was disallowed in that game for handball. Again, Jan, it was an accidental handball, wasn't it? What he should have done is, as soon as it hit his hand, he should have kicked it sideways so that it hit a defender and went in, and then everything would have been fine, wouldn't it? But yeah, poor old Glasner didn't think that there was enough camera angles to tell, even though it looked for all the world as if the ball had come off his arms and gone into the goal.
That's because the ball came off his arms, Graham, and went into the goal. That's because that's what happened. And Glasner accused the VAR guys of making it up. But again, this just goes back to this stuff was supposed to stop all of this controversy, wasn't it? Do you remember? I mean, how many years has VAR been in England now? It must be five. Is this 5 or 6 years now?
It's seven now, I think, to 2019.
Seven now. All right, okay. So 7 years, and it's actually got worse.
Yes.
And not better. Yeah. So the things we were complaining about 7 or 8 years ago are still happening now. Except now we've just got some nice cameras to all over the place to see it on. It is a joke. I refer our listeners back to the hundreds of hours that we've laid down about how bad VAR is. So I won't go into it now. But it justifies our position, I think.
I think it does. I think it does. Should I bother going to Terry to ask whether or not he thinks Glasner had a valid point? No, he's shaking his head. He's shaking his head to say no. No, don't come to me with... Okay. Well, we'll move on, because we'll talk about Arsenal-Chelsea, because that was, of course, it was one of the games in our box set. I didn't have a lot of fun while watching it, because as an Arsenal fan, it was great to watch us win. But I had, earlier in the day, I'd been at Crawley to watch Arsenal beat Brighton in the opening game of the WSL, a game which Arsenal led by a goal throughout the whole game. And it was quite tense, because although we dominated largely the game, couldn't really push ahead. And it was always feeling like they might concede a goal on the break. And it felt like that in the Premier League game. I kept thinking, well, these strikers are going to click sooner or later. There's going to be a through ball and then one of them's going to be one-on-one and score, because that's just the way this goes. But Arsenal held on. I wouldn't say held on, because they restricted Chelsea to less, I think, 0.35 XG, which, considering what Chelsea have been like this season, I thought was quite impressive. Yeah, and as someone who isn't an Arsenal or a Chelsea fan, what did you think of the game?
It was great. I mean, I literally just sat down with my cup of tea and the goal went in. Yeah, it was great. And that was a fantastic first half. I thought really great exhibition of just mad, chaotic football. Chelsea are quite chaotic at the moment. I heard someone refer to how they play as like basketball football, and it felt a little bit like that in the first half. But Morgan Rodgers scoring with a pretty good goal, I think. That early on meant Arsenal had to come out of the blocks and had to go and get the goal. You know, it took them about 20 minutes to get it, but Kai Havertz got it. He had an excellent game, I thought.
He did.
He was really, really good. And and good to see Odegaard in amongst the goals. I think he's doubled his tally.
Trebled.
From last season.
Trebled it.
In all competitions.
In all competitions, yes. Yeah.
But yeah, it was order and chaos. That was the difference between the two teams. I love watching the kind of late game on a Sunday. It's a really nice way to wrap up the weekend. And I thought that was a really great advert for live football. It was really, really great. What I am slightly concerned about is that Sunderland are playing Arsenal next week.
They are indeed, yes.
Yeah, and that's not going to be fun, because I thought Arsenal looked really good. I don't think they were flustered by the fact they went behind. There was certainly more urgency when they did. But I think they're just looking better and better. They've got the feel of champions about them.
And the game up at the Stadium of Light last season, that was quite chaotic as well, wasn't it? Finished 2-2, didn't it? So if there is the chaos that was there last season, perhaps Arsenal are in a better place to deal with it than they did last season.
Yeah, maybe. It'd be interesting to see what they do with the advertising hoardings. They brought them in so close to the pitch to prevent Arsenal from getting any long throws in there. And Regis Labrice was excellent in his when he questioned about it in his post-match interview, when he said, maybe it was the wind, which was excellent. We all knew exactly what had happened there. So whether they'll get away with that this time, I don't know. But it is very windy in the northeast.
It is very windy in the northeast. Yeah. But Arsenal scored 6 goals in the Premier League so far from open play. It took until match day 10 to score 6 goals from open play. Thank you, Abinho, for that stat. So it's a different beast this season, obviously. Obviously, it helps having a lot of your players fit. It also helps having new players settling quite well. I think Solis has slipped in very, very well. You're right with Kai Havertz's performance. He seems to really enjoy playing and scoring against Chelsea, which is lovely to see. He gave it a lovely celebration when he scored, put it that way. He wasn't given an assist, but I really think he deserves one, because he just allowed the ball to just pass by him, which most number nines, I think, would be thinking, right, penalty area, the ball's coming to me, I'm going this no matter what. I assume he got the call from Odegaard to say leave, this was all part of a planned move. But the leave was just amazing. I just wonder, I haven't heard one of the old-fashioned number nines talk about it yet, and I wonder what their opinion would be. I'd love to hear what Lineker or Shearer would say if they would have left it for a midfielder coming behind them saying, leave it, I'm going to score this. I can see them appreciating the goal and loving it, but if they put themselves in that position that Havertz was in, I don't think they would have left it. But I think that's why Havertz, I think, he's a different breed of centre-forward, isn't he, Terry? He's not a classic number nine, is he?
Well, I remember when he started his career at Leverkusen, and he wasn't really a number nine at all. I mean, he was obviously a forward player, but I always associated him being as a slightly withdrawn striker, more like a number 10, but a versatile player who can really play on any side of the pitch, including through the middle. He's not a classic number nine, no. But I think that's one of the reasons why Arsenal are so good, is that they've got a player who's that versatile, but who could also play and occupy that number nine slot. I'm not saying that he is not a number nine. He very evidently is a number nine. but his previous experience, and I think the coaching vision of Arteta, is that you are a lot more flexible in how you approach that role. They're back in Lineker and Shearer's day, it was their job to score goals. So if you were presented with the ball in the penalty area, you're damn right you're going to take the ball and try and score with it, because otherwise you're going to get yelled at by your manager if you don't. But that's not this Arsenal team. And in fact, I'd suggest that's not actually modern football these days. But, that's not true, of course. If it's JP Mateta or if it's Erling Haaland, then yeah, that's exactly what you expect them to do. But with Havertz, I think because he's got that versatility, And it's clearly been encouraged to show that vision. I think the thing that strikes me about that dummy, if I may call it a dummy, I could call it a leaf, whatever you want to call it. I think what strikes me about that also is that it plays against that kind of sense of an ultra rigidity about Arsenal, and which I think stems from last season's narrative of the set pieces and all of that stuff and like them playing ugly football. But I think the fact that they are encouraged to and are capable of improvising in such a way in order to score goals speaks an awful lot about, one, how an awful lot of what was said about Arsenal last season is bollocks, but also about, in fairness, about how that team seems to be progressing in these early stages of the season. And they do appear to be playing like a team that is benefiting from having had the same coach for goodness knows how long now, used to working with each other and benefited from hugely from the confidence that comes from winning a league. And they don't appear to be fatigued in any way. They seem to have the appetite to do it again. And at the moment, they appear to be the best place. I mean, I think Chelsea, I think we had Chelsea finishing higher than City overall, which perhaps on reflection may prove to be an unwise choice, you know, from whatever idiot made that call. But I think that you could see the difference from what I would say. I only caught the highlights, I should say. But I think Chelsea have got an awful lot to offer this season. But it's a new coach, another new coach, more squad refreshes. You can tell the difference between a team like Arsenal who know each other and a team like Chelsea who are still getting to know each other. And you could see the difference between there. And it's a testament to Chelsea in a way that they weren't necessarily that far behind them. Although, as Graham points out, they were pretty shut down. But yeah, they were like a bunch of bees in a bottle, right? I mean, like fighting really, really hard to get out, but nevertheless, unable to break that down. So yeah, it was really interesting and insightful result, I think. And massive props as well to taking Havertz off. I mean, Martin Arteta, that was a bold move, swapping out Havertz. But it's going to be a long, old season. And there's Champions League around the corner. You know, Gyökeres is there to score goals as well, you know, so, and to do the number nine thing as well. So you've got to do it, you know, otherwise you're only making problems for yourself further on down the line. And it worked and it paid off. So hats off to everybody concerned. That's a terrific result. That is a terrific performance.
Yes. Yeah. Arsenal do have a trip to Napoli on Wednesday for the first round of the Champions League. So should we discuss the Champions League?
Yeah.
Should we talk about that now? Because it does kick off this week. The Champions League kicks off this week, and then we go into Europa League, which you guys will be more than interested in, comes up next week. So we'll discuss a bit about that next week. But this week, it's about the proper show. Yeah, the Champions League.
The proper show, did you say?
Yeah, the main event. You know, that's it. They actually say it in the lyrics there. So the main event, the Champions, you know. So that starts this week, the big table. We're still getting used to the mega table. This is the third season of the mega table. We spoke a bit about this last week, and as you know, listeners, this is a podcast that likes the mega table. I know Terry wasn't here, but Terry, you can add your support for the mega table right now if you wish, or if your opinion has since changed, you can say that now.
No, my opinion hasn't really changed on the mega table at all. I still enjoy the mega table. I listen to your podcast and I'm not really going to add anything further on that. I feel that the whole group table thing is still very much a construct in order for commercial purposes, and that the competition proper starts in the new year. But this is unhelpful, old-fashioned thinking. So I'll say, yay, mega table.
Mm.
Yay, commerce.
Well, of course, one thing about splitting the Champions League and the Europa League and Conference League over the first 2 weeks means that we don't actually get a chance of having another round of fixtures for another month. So this is almost like a little mini taster of the Champions League, was we get one round of fixtures coming in, and then the next round isn't until the middle of October. So it's almost a bit of a false start, isn't it, Jan? It's getting you excited and then taking it back again, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a midweek competition played over several months. So I think it's a good time to do it, just to give you a little amuse-bouche to excite one's taste buds. yeah, it's good. I'm looking forward to it. There's some cracking ties in that. So, I mean, we're adding to the domestic season, and in Germany as well, as Terry's pointed out, has been very exciting. Exciting start. So let's just layer it on. The main event, Terry, the actual main event, is happening next week. This is the amuse-bouche.
Yeah,
the actual
event. And then you've got the slight coda afterwards in the Conference League as a sort of bit of a palate cleanser, if you will. But everybody who knows anything about football understands that the Europa League is where it's at this season, lads. And we all understand this. And also, I think, bearing in mind, we've got a large international break coming up as well quite soon, don't we? So there's all of that going on there. I think in all seriousness, I think it would be better if it was a bit later in the season. It feels a little bit more natural. But, you know, I understand that the schedules are rough and it's always something to look forward to. I don't think there's necessarily any kind of issues about breaking up of momentum and stuff like that. It's one round of fixtures. Pick of the round? I don't know. I reckon probably Inter versus Real is probably, I mean, Arsenal, Napoli, yes, but the Real Inter, I should say. That looks like a, particularly given Mourinho's not had the best start to the season and, of course, playing against his old club.
Yeah, I'd say Liverpool Atleti is going to be a good tie as well. Harkens back to 6.5 years ago to the super spreader event, doesn't it, that one?
Yes,
of course. Oh my God, the infinite.
That and Cheltenham, wasn't it?
Yeah. What's going on here? Yeah.
Everyone's getting ill and you're bringing lots of people into a stadium. Well done, chaps. That was it after that, wasn't it?
It was Cheltenham, and then there was a Stereophonics gig as well, which was on the eve of lockdown, I want to say. And then after that, the world was just completely changed. And then we look back on that thinking, why did they allow that to happen? But anyway,
that was crazy. Yeah. I can say I remember that time. I went with a friend of the show to see Chelsea. I think Chelsea were playing Manchester United, and it was around that time. And I was standing there going, "Why am I here? I'm surrounded by thousands of people, and everyone's coughing and spluttering." And I was like, "What am I doing? What am I doing?" But I wasn't in charge of government.
No, that's true.
But you know,
that's true.
Anyway.
I was reminded of another thing, because there's obviously it's the 25th anniversary of 9/11 this week, and I was reminded Arsenal played on 9/11, 2001.
Yes.
Arsenal and Liverpool played on that day. Arsenal were in Mallorca, playing Mallorca, lost that game. Well, that's because all the teams were out. The teams that played the next day didn't, so Man United didn't play their game on September the 12th, because obviously the planes couldn't go anywhere, so everyone was grounded. And so those fixtures weren't played for another month. Yeah, well, that's brought things down a bit, hasn't it? But anyway.
Just a peg or two.
Okay. Well, let's bring it back then. Let's bring it back. That's enough Champions League chat. We're going to be talking, I feel, a lot about European football next week. So we'll keep our powder dry for then, shall we? Yeah, as I said earlier, I was at Crawley this weekend to see Arsenal against Brighton get off to a winning start in the WSL. But it's come at a backdrop where the BBC are perhaps, I don't know, if they're pulling back, or though they've certainly been accused of pulling back on their coverage of women's football, with the cancellation of the women's football show, or the non-production of the women's football show, the highlights package that would come late on a Sunday night, very, very, very late on a Sunday night after the Sunday match of the day. So they've taken that off and they've replaced it with what is called an overlap-style chat show hosted by Alex Scott. And quite a few people have been a bit sort of like, well, oh, this is terrible. This is shunting women's football off onto the internet rather than having it on the actual channels. Terry, what's your perception of this? Is this a backward step by the BBC, or is this providing content that the users would more readily accept? What do you think?
I suppose the happiest circumstances would be if they could try and do both. They could try and do like a traditional broadcast show for the broadcast channels, but then maybe to also do a sort of like more bespoke online offering. I suspect the reality is that the audiences for the women's football show are not very good. And this is partly because it's on stupidly late at night on a Sunday when most people are getting ready to go to bed or are at bed. And it's in that kind of classic dilemma of any kind of broadcast show. Is that it is still very much governed by the linear audience. How many people actually tune in to watch this show? That's still, what, to a very large degree, what governs its budget and justifies its existence. Well, if you scheduled it earlier in the evening, then it would get a higher audience. And this is sound logic, but doesn't actually always necessarily end up being the case. Perhaps the thing that to be realistic about is women's football is just not as popular as men's football. It just isn't. And it's going to be a long while before it is. And so when you're scheduling and budgeting for broadcast TV shows, which are expensive, then you do look at that and you say, well, let's put it on before Match of the Day, for example, and try and see if we can make it work there. But if it doesn't wash its face in terms of audience figures, then in fact, you can actually harm the women's game more by exposing it in areas on the schedule where it suffers from low audience figures. And you get critics of women's football, of which there are many, pointing at it and saying, ah. So it is difficult to answer because you don't really know what's in their mind. We do know the BBC are under huge amounts of pressure across the board to save money because the licence fee is not going up in accordance with the cost of living. And so, you know, there's huge pressures on the BBC. They're probably looking at this and they're looking at the potential audience and maybe even the actual audience and thinking, this is a thing about women's football. There is a perception that the female audience is more interested in watching this stuff in an online package, which I think is a dangerous way of looking at things. Mm. And I'm not entirely certain that there's an awful lot of data that drives that perception. But I suspect that what they've done is they're looking to save a bit of money. So what they've done is that they've said, well, let's just move everything. Everything's moving online anyway, which is a great thing that broadcasters say when it suits them. When it doesn't suit them, they say, no, it's all about live TV, you know. But then when it does suit them, they say, oh, yeah, everything's moving online. You know, so well, let's just move it online. It really is difficult to know whether or not that is the right thing or whether or not the BBC are maybe backing out or losing faith in women's football. I would really be very, very surprised if the BBC were losing any interest in covering women's football. I think it falls smack bang into their remit. I think it's something that they would want to do. If anything, they might be trying to protect women's football. But again, I don't know whether or not it really needs protection. So it's a difficult one to answer, Graham, and to figure out. But I can understand why people would be disappointed and feel that loss of status of having your own broadcast TV show is bad for the women's game. And I can certainly understand why people would think that.
I'm in two minds about this because, you know, it was on the series link. It would be on my set-top box waiting for me on Monday morning to watch as it was. It doesn't sound like they're going to be putting less money into it, the production side of it, because the production values of the women's football show were extremely poor. They did the best, but they obviously had a budget of about 10 quid.
Mm.
I remember watching the first one of it last season, and they had three panelists on air, and they had a host. The set was basically a three-seater sofa, a flat-screen TV on the wall, and a couple of ferns, and that was basically it. But now they've got this chat show, they're saying, with Alex Scott, who is...
Top draw.
Yeah, top draw BBC talent. So it's not like the people that they were having on the women's football show. So I'll wait to see how it looks. I mean, it's going to be available on iPlayer, I'm sure, as well as on YouTube. But they're putting it on YouTube, and I guess they're going to be putting it on iPlayer as well. I'm going to wait and see how that goes before passing judgment on it. So, yeah, give it a couple of weeks, I'd say. But what will we be watching on telly this weekend, I wonder? Well, Jan, what will we be watching? Saturday night, there's only one show to watch, isn't there? Sunderland versus Arsenal. We've already talked about it. Looking forward to it.
Well, it's before the watershed and it's going to be a massacre. So, no, I think Sunderland will give a good account of themselves, but I just, you know, as we talked about earlier in the show, Arsenal are looking so good.
Sunderland had a great performance against Brentford, and their new Ecuadorian guy looks fun and games, doesn't he?
Yes, he is fun and games. Yeah, he was all over the place when he's been let loose, wound up and let loose. To be fair, actually, there was a goal that was ruled offside. Dan Ballard got a goal, and it was unfortunately there was a player obscuring the line of sight for the goalkeeper, so it was ruled off. There was a few of those this weekend, wasn't there? But yeah, a good performance, but got to be realistic, Graham. And we've got the big one to look forward to next week, you know?
Terry, the Manchester derby, that's on Sunday, and we've got Tottenham-Everton on Saturday. Tottenham, that's a must win, isn't it? So early in the season at home to Everton, you'd say.
Yeah, this is possibly a game that they might be able to convince themselves they can win. But Everton have been very tough this season and obviously a very solid unit under, you know, extremely efficient and successful and well-loved manager David Moyes. You look at Tottenham and you wonder where the first win's going to come from. And of course, you know, with each passing bad result, the psychodrama just intensifies. So, you know, that could be an awful lot of fun to watch.
And yeah, I think the Manchester derby is going to be interesting this weekend. First real test for Maresca and really a proper test for Carrick at home as well. See how that one turns out. And if you want to see what we think of all seven games to take you from Friday to Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe to our Substack. It is free, absolutely free, and you get a load of content about seven really, really, really fun games. And it'll be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
I've not been to Tank Museum. Where's that?
Oh my God, there's so many tanks in the Tank Museum. It's out Dorset Way, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
It's near Monkey World.
It's right next door to Monkey World.
We are
waiting for them to merge at some point.
It's like you just got, you know, the idea of the monkeys gaining super intelligence, you know, and then taking the tanks and then, you know, taking over the country.
Fucked, yeah.
That's where Planet of the Apes clearly starts, isn't it? Yes. Whose idea was it to put a load of heavy ordnance next to the Monkey World?
You maniacs.